Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Surprise Jeb Podcast. I'm your host, Zach Ruger, surprising you with new topics every single week of the entire year, every single week. And, of course, jabbing you with your daily dose of UFC. And we are fresh off of UFC Vegas 98, which honestly didn't disappoint that much. I can't lie. I was more high on it since I went 10-2 on predictions. We did damn good on that event. So we're going to be recapping all the action from that and talking about what's next for the fighters on today's episode. Also, going to be looking at week 6 of the NFL, talk about the top fantasy performers, talk about the scores, where all the teams are now at in the standings, and we're also going to be looking at the top 10 players per fantasy position in terms of fantasy football, because we do that now every single week. That's a recurring thing here. Also, top 10 new things in pop culture. We do it every single episode. New UFC news. We kick it off every single week. What we're also going to be looking at on today's episode is I'm going to be giving my thoughts on Reacher Season 2. We talked about Season 1, I believe, last episode or the episode before that. I finished Season 2. It was amazing. I can't wait for Season 3, which is coming out in January, I believe, maybe February. Coming soon, thankfully. I'm also getting the books from the library. I'm actually excited to start reading those. And I'm also going to give my thoughts on one of my favorite documentaries I've ever watched. It's called The Jinx. It's about Robert Durst. We're going to be talking about that coming up. But guys, we got to get through this. All right, I'm currently filming this at 9:20 at night. I got to be up at 8 in the morning. We'll see how this goes. Let's kick things right off with, of course, new UFC news. Every time it's new UFC news. And this time we actually have some banger UFC news for you guys. The UFC 310 pay-per-view going down in Las Vegas December 7th. I believe it is December 7th. Of course, we finally got it. We finally freaking got it. Two title fights. We'll start with the co-main event. The co-main event, your current men's flyweight champion, Alexander Pantoja, takes on the former risen flyweight champion. I think it is flyweight champion, Kai Asakura. Absolutely a phenomenal co-main event right there. Absolutely phenomenal fight. Kai Asakura, in his first UFC fight, is fighting for a championship. That's how good this freaking guy is. His professional record is 21-4, and I do believe he's on a two-fight winning streak, I think it is. And out of his 21 wins, he has 17 finishes, all right? Notable people he's actually beaten. He actually holds a win over Manel Cape. Fun fact, Manel Cape, and also Kyoji Horiguchi, who I'm sure if we have any MMA fans on here, they recognize his name. He's in other promotions all the time. But Kai Asakura, excited to be seeing him fight. And he's only, what, 30? His birthday's on Halloween. You gotta be freaking kidding me. He turns 31 on Halloween. I freaking love this guy. Of course, Alexander Pantoja, 27-5, 11-3 in the UFC. He's on like a 4 or 5 fight winning streak. Coming off a big win over Brandon Royval. And after what we just saw from Brandon Royval, the way Pantoja dominated him, yeah, gonna be a good fight there. Also on that UFC 310 card, before we talk about the main event, Vicente Luque and Nick Diaz. That's right, Nick Diaz is coming back. He's 41 years old. He should not be fighting Vicente Luque. He was a full decade younger than him. But yeah, like, you know, Vicente Luque, he's coming off of some brutal losses. Hasn't done much as of late. Nick Diaz, I actually give him a better shot than most to get the victory there. Another fight coming at you at UFC 310. This one recently announced. Welterweight matchup between Randy Brown and Brian Battle. Can't believe these two are fighting. Randy Brown, he's on like a little 5-fight winning streak, looking absolutely phenomenal. Just knocked out Muslim Salikov in, I think, a minute, less than 2 minutes. 19-5 record, 13-5 in the UFC. He's incredible. Takes on Brian Battle, 6-1. Just finished Kevin Jussett in France, Kevin Jussett's home nation. Absolutely incredible. I wish those two were fighting in the rankings. I wish those guys were fighting someone like Vicente Luque, someone like Jeff Neal, somebody into the rankings. Why do they have to fight each other and one of them will never get back into the rankings? It's unfortunate, but I do pick Brian Battle for that matchup. But now I will get on to it. The main event for UFC 310, my boy, my sweet Prince, the man from Kazakhstan, 18-0, 6-0 in the UFC, 18 wins, 18 finishes. The number 3 ranked welterweight, Shavkat Rakhmonov, takes on Bilal Muhammad. Remember the name. People are still, he's still begging people to remember his name. Bilal Muhammad, your men's welterweight champion. This is massive. I'm so pumped for this. Bilal Muhammad, last win was over Leon Edwards this year. Last time Shavkat fought, he was finishing Wonderboy Thompson in December. So it's been a while. It will have been a full year since Shavkat last fought, but it was all worth it. It was all worth it, guys. He finally got his title shot. capitalized, and he's going to be getting it. He's going to win that belt. I'm telling you, I have so much faith in Shavkat. I truly believe he is meant to be your men's welterweight champion. Not Bilal Muhammad. Bilal's getting his ass finished. He's getting knocked out. He's getting submitted. Oh, man, if Bilal beats Shavkat, I'm actually going to be so sad. I'm such a fan of Shavkat Rakhmonov. I really hope he gets this one done. Other minute fights that have been announced, UFC Vegas 100 going down November 9th. Charles Radke takes on Matthew Semelsberger. Charles Radke, 9-4, was recently finished his last time out by Carlos Prates. Matthew Semelsberger, 5-5 in the UFC. This dude has beaten Jake Matthews, and that's about it. Other than that, he has been finished a couple of times. You know, kind of an ugly fight, but good matchmaking. I'll tell you right now, this is good matchmaking. If you know where these two guys are at UFC-wise in their career, this is good matchmaking. Loser's got to go. Winner will stay. Another one coming at you. UFC Vegas 101, January 11th. Dang it, we're really going back to the apex right away in January. Ugh. Alrighty. Andres Bane Gustafson makes his UFC debut coming off of Dana White's Contender Series as he takes on Preston Parsons in the men's welterweight division. Preston 2-3, holds a win over Ignacio Bahomadez and Matthew Semelsberger, who we just mentioned. Good fight right there. I'd probably give it to the newbie. And the final fight, which was recently announced. Actually, it was announced 7 hours ago. So, I mean, it was really announced earlier today. Taliesin Teixeira, no relation to Glover, 7-0, all knockouts, coming off against Dana White's Contender Series, makes his UFC debut against Lucas Brzezinski. Lucas Brzezinski, 1-4 in the UFC, and been knocked out in three of those four losses, maybe all four losses. That's a good matchup. You already know I'm riding with the Dana White's Contender Series. Boy, I love picking the guys coming off of Dana White's Contender Series. It's just fun, and it makes it enjoyable. It really, really does. So those are all your new UFC news, all the new fights coming at you. Other than that, nothing new venue-wise. We haven't really gotten any venue updates on anything. But I am really happy that we finally know what the UFC 310 main event is. I was waiting so long to see that. Now we finally have it. So moving on from that, we're going to get into something exciting, which I've been waiting to talk about, and that is Reacher Season 2. Just finished it. It was phenomenal. All right, Alan Richson, I think it is just phenomenal. He is absolutely phenomenal as an actor, and I absolutely love watching him. And all the characters, I really rock with them. Some stuff in the show, you know, it gets so just unrealistic. It's like comical, but yet again, it's a fictional show. All right, it's a fictional show. Season 2, if anyone is unfamiliar, you know, Season 1, of course, Reacher solves the murder of his brother, takes down the villains, take down the big corporation in the made-up Galveston. We're going to talk about Galveston in a second. And what is it? Oh, my gosh, I cannot remember. Was it in Arkansas? It was in Margrave, Georgia. That's what it was. In the town of Margrave, Georgia. Reacher, played by Alan Richson, this badass military, former operation guy, I don't even know what you want to call him. He gets stuff done. He kills people. He's a great guy. And he basically solves the murder of his brother, you know, gets the girl, works with the detectives, sets the town right. You know, he finds himself at the start of Season 2. He's in, I believe it is Arkansas, you know, collecting his pension check, and he gets this message from his old buddy, oh my gosh, what's her name? Neely, and she basically tells him, hey, someone, one of their old mates from their platoon, I believe it was in the military, was found dead, thrown out of a helicopter, and they work together, they meet up with two of their old buddies, including Reacher's old flame, who he actually gets with, hubba hubba, and they work to uncover what is going on and solve the mystery of their friend's murder. It's phenomenal. I don't know if it's as good as Season 1, but they might be equal. I'll be honest, they might be equal. I might like Season 1 just a bit better just because I did not know what to expect from Reacher Season 1, whereas for Reacher Season 2, I did have some expectations, but it was phenomenal. It was truly phenomenal. The plot twist, the ending, all felt really good, and similar to the first season, it ends with more stories up for grabs, but with you kind of fulfilled where everything's at. But, you know, Reacher, he's kind of lonely. He's this hard-nosed guy, and the whole season, you know, it kind of makes him realize that, hey, you know, all my old platoon mates who he was actually in charge of, they were called the Special Investigators, I believe they were. They're actually his family. So it was really wonderful to see. It ended really good with this huge fight and then the bad guys thrown out of the helicopter at the end, which was absolutely badass. And then it ends with them getting this big sum of money, which was going to be illegally used in the show. And it was phenomenal. It was absolutely phenomenal. And he uses it for good, gives it to all the people, and you kind of see all the wrongs that were written being all the wrongs that happened were written off for good. You know what I'm trying to say? I'm trying to use the right verbiage. I don't know if I am. Because there's this funny scene in the final episode, spoiler, where they have, like, they let, like, the pilot go and, like, the chemist or whatever, the engineer who worked on these rockets that were going to be used for, like, terrorism or whatever, and they let the guy go. They let these two guys go in a helicopter, and then the rockets, they strap it into a bazooka, almost, or an RPG, and they blow up the helicopter. It just kind of makes you realize that, all right, these technically the good guys in the show, you know, they really get the bad guys good. I think if you get what I'm trying to say. I'm trying to articulate my feelings for this show. But the music in this, every episode kind of ending with Jack Reacher saying a badass claim, it is all very good. And I'm about to read the books. I'm excited for it. Season 3 of Reacher, I believe we talked about last episode. It comes out in January or something. I'm pumped for it, but I encourage everyone to watch it. Like I said, this is a 10 out of 10 show for me. Truly, I don't give out 10 out of 10s a lot. This is a 10 out of 10 show. I highly recommend it. And actually, this is very interesting. Out of the 8 episodes on the show, there's this guy named Scott Sullivan. He wrote 3 of them. Other than that, there were 5 other people writing each episode. So I always find it interesting when episodes are written by different people. Very fascinating. But yes, I'm excited for season 4 and actually season 3 and 4. They're both confirmed. Exciting stuff. The other show I wanted to talk to you guys about, it is called The Jinx. The Jinx is truly the best true crime documentary I think I've seen. It was phenomenal. It was shocking. It was shocking. It was mind-blowing. So let me give you the background for this. So the series, The Jinx, is an American true crime documentary television series about New York real estate heir Robert Durst, who is a convicted murderer. And the first season is titled The Life and Deaths of Robert Durst. I didn't watch the second. Okay, this was only 6 episodes. There's a season, there's a part 2, which came out like 9 years later. I had no interest in watching that because the basis, the good stuff, was in this original documentary. And so the series was directed by Andrew Drecke, who had previously directed a feature fictional film called All Good Things, which I think actually starred Ryan Gosling and Kirsten Dunst, funny enough. I mean, fine, how about that? And this was inspired by Durst's biography about how he murdered his wife. Or, you know, did he not? We'll have to see. Durst had professed admiration for the film and telephoned Drecke, the director, after its release, offering to be interviewed. This conversation was recorded and incorporated into the documentary. It's crazy. All right, so they're making a film about this real estate mogul, millions, billions of dollars. His family is worth billions of dollars. And this heir, all right, who's old now? Robert Durst is like old when he's doing this. He's willingly doing an interview, okay? And he's clearly becoming somewhat senile or something. It is so fascinating. He's probably a psychopath, honestly. Durst sat with Drecke for more than 20 hours over a couple years, several years, it says. I think it took place over 3 to 5 years, despite having never previously cooperated with any journalist. There's something about Andrew Drecke. He was just able to bring it out of him. The Jinx gained widespread exposure when Durst was arrested on first-degree murder charges for the death of his friend Susan Berman the day before the documentary's finale aired. Incredible. Absolutely incredible. I mean, this was just so shocking. The entire story is super shocking. I mean, I can kind of read you the basis of it. The series, it investigates the unsolved 1982 disappearance of his wife, Robert Durst's wife, Kathy, the 2000 execution-style killing of his writer, Susan Berman, and the 2001 death and dismemberment of Durst's neighbor, Morris Black, in Galveston, Texas. So you may be like, Galveston, Texas. Why was this real estate mogul from New York going to Galveston, Texas? Well, basically, I think it was Vanity Fair or Times Magazine, one of the big newspapers. They ran a headline that Robert Durst murdered his wife. And he went down to Galveston, Texas, you know, using a disguise. He was disguised as a woman, okay? He was disguised as some woman. And he rents this crappy apartment. You know, he's a millionaire. And his, you know, like, you know, in Modern Family, how Cam and Mitchell, they rent the upstairs to a tenant. That was their situation, okay? So Robert Durst lived above this guy named Morris Black. And, you know, Morris and him, they became friends somewhat, but they got into an argument one day, and Robert Durst killed him. Okay, Robert Durst killed him. I know if that might not actually have been legally what it says happened, but that's clearly what happened. And whether or not he killed him on purpose is yet to be, you know, actually made official. But he admitted to chopping him up and throwing him into the Gulf of Mexico. Literally, in the trial, he admitted that. It was absolutely insane. He was Durst was suspected of involvement in the first two murders and confessed to the third, but claimed self-defense and was somehow acquitted. He was somehow acquitted despite admitting to chopping up this guy that might have accidentally died. It was absolutely insane. This series, you know, incorporates a wide array of existing media, including news footage, security footage, police evidence, and archival interviews, combined with footage shot by Andrew Drecke. It is composed of contemporary interviews, visual reenactments, some shot at Drecke's upstate New York home, it says, and self-reflective footage of Drecke's filmmaking process and odd working relationship with Durst. Its complex editing style and narrative construction emphasize the contradictions within both Durst's life and the bizarre and grisly murders he committed. All of his murders were just so confusing, like with his wife, you know, no one really know if they were getting into an argument or if he was getting like abusive or whatever, and they have no idea where she went. Truly, they have no idea where Kathy Durst ended up. Like, she just completely gone. With Susan Berman, they can never really figure out why he murdered her, you know, they definitely for a reason. And with Morris Black, just another crazy killing. And these are the only three that they can actually what's the word I'm searching for? The only ones they can actually prove that, like, they can actually show that he was killed them. He could have killed way more people. He might have been a serial killer. During the conclusion of the fifth episode, Sareeb Kaufman, who is Berman's stepson, Susan Berman, the woman that was killed execution style, his writer, his secretary, if you want to call her that, contacts the filmmakers, asking them to review material that Berman left after her murder. In it, he highlights an envelope that Robert Durst sent Susan Berman in March of 1999. This was the craziest part. All right, they saved the best for last. All right, truly, this documentary is one of the best. I saw this on TikTok, and it's like, this has one of the craziest endings to a documentary. I'm sorry if I'm spoiling it. I just had to tell everyone about this. All right, the envelope that they show, it has block letters, and in its handwriting, it shows the words Beverly Hills, but Beverly is misspelled, okay? They then match this up with a December 2000 letter, which was anonymously sent to the police to alert them to Susan Berman's murder. The filmmakers, shocked by the revelation, place both envelopes in a safety deposit box and decide to get a second interview from Robert Durst. So you're looking at this envelope that was sent by an anonymous person that said the location of where Susan Berman was located at. And then they show a letter that Robert Durst wrote to her a couple of years, like a year earlier, and it's the exact same writing, the exact same misspelling of Beverly. Insane. Absolutely insane. So, you know, in the sixth and final episode, and I was waiting for this. I'm like, okay, this is supposed to be the craziest ending to a documentary ever. What's going to happen? Sixth and final episode, the filmmakers, they visit a forensic examiner, they analyze both, and they kind of conclude that, yeah, both these letters came from one person. Drecke then attempts to get a second interview with Durst, who suddenly becomes evasive and uninterested in a follow-up. At one point, he claims to be in Spain, but Kaufman says that Durst told him he was in Los Angeles. After Durst is then arrested for violating a restraining order filed by his brother Douglas. Mind you, his brother Douglas, head of the Durst Foundation, wants no part of his brother. In fact, they're doing like a ceremony in New York to honor him. You know, he's clearly just like a rich, sleazy businessman. And Drecke, their film director, he goes up and he goes to speak to him. There's a moment where he goes, "Hey, I'm working on a documentary for your brother." And he goes, and Robert Durst, this millionaire, goes, "Oh, so you're not successful." And it was just crazy how he was talking down to him, and then he had them escort out. Crazy. So Drecke, he convinces Robert Durst, the murderer, to give a second interview, and during it, Drecke confronts Durst about the match and handwriting on the two envelopes. Durst acknowledges the similarity, denies writing the letter about Berman's interview, denies writing the letter about Berman's murder, despite saying he wrote the other one. He then says that someone must have written both these letters. Like, he was completely contradicting himself. There's this crazy moment where he puts, he holds out this letter. He holds out the one envelope, picture of the envelope, and he's like, "Did you write this one?" He's like, "No." He holds up the other one. He's like, "Did you write this one?" "Yes." He then puts both writings of Beverly Hill up, like, not showing the rest of the letter. He's like, "Can you tell which one you wrote?" And he goes, "No." And then he's like, "All right, that's the end of the interview. Let's do that." And the interview ends. And this is something that happened earlier in the documentary, which was crazy, is that after the interview, Robert Durst goes in the bathroom, and he's unaware that his microphone is still recording. Okay, and this had happened earlier where he had been speaking to himself. You know, he rambles to himself, speaks to himself in like a very low tone, and he doesn't realize that his mic is on. He doesn't realize his mic is on. And he says the most chilling words. He rambles at the end, ending with, "What the hell did I do? Killed them all, of course. So stupid." He admitting to killing them all. And the documentary just ends. It cuts to black, has some eerie music. Cinema. Absolute cinema. This was an Emmy-nominated series. And, you know, I don't really mess with the Emmys. You know, I don't really mess with the Emmys. But just to let you know how notable this series was, I encourage you guys to watch this documentary. It's just mind-blowing how he didn't get arrested, how he was able to evade capture, how he was able to do all of this when he's clearly guilty. He clearly murdered his wife. He clearly murdered his writer. He clearly murdered his neighbor. It was insane. Like, his entire life is so weird, and it all goes back to a rivalry he had with his brother. I mean, his brother had to get a restraining order against him because he said he was going to kill him. Okay, they even asked them, they're like, when did you not like your brother? And he's like, when we were five. So this went all the way back. And I think it went down to the fact that Robert Durst was the eldest brother, and his brother Bobby went passed him up to take over the company. But The Jinx, it's on HBO Max or Max, whatever you want to call it. I encourage you all to watch it. It was phenomenal. Absolutely phenomenal. 10 out of 10 for me. 10 out of 10. Another 10 out of 10 for me. I'm giving you all good recommendations. And some other good recommendations that I'm going to let you know right now is who you want to buy on in fantasy and who you want to sell on. Because every week we go over the top 10 spots in fantasy per position. And this week I even added, I did a little research of my own to see who is moving upwards and who's moving downwards. You know, a little UFC ranking style, like, oop, who moved up one spot? Who's now ranked that wasn't ranked last week? Fun stuff. Let's get right on into it. Starting off, week 6, you know, is completed. It's done. We're going to be talking about all the action that happened in a moment. But what I do want to touch on is the standing of everyone in fantasy. So for QB, Lamar Jackson, he was number one last week. He's still the top dog. Ravens are a powerhouse. No shocker there. Baker Mayfield, having a big week. He actually passed up Jaden Daniels to go from 2 to 3. So Baker's at 2, Jaden Daniels at 3. Jaden Daniels, probably rookie of the year. Right now, he's having a phenomenal year. Incredible. Moving down one spot, Baker's just been balling. All right, Baker's just been balling. At number 4, Joe Burrow, no shocker. Number 5, Josh Allen, no shocker. At number 6, Justin Fields jumps 2 spots from his week 5 ranking. Hey, he's been doing good. Leading the Steelers to a win here and there. Love it. Geno Smith, down 1 to 7. Kyler Murray, down 1 to 8. Look, they've been average. Brock Purdy, now in at 9. CJ Stroud, now in at 10. These two are expected to be in the top 10 all year. They have finally gotten in there. CJ Stroud has been playing much better football than when he started out the year. And as for Brock Purdy, proving the doubters wrong every single day. You know, he's so freaking good. All right, the last Mr. Nobody to Mr. Somebody. Running back Derrick Henry reclaims the number one spot in the running back rankings, passes up Alvin Kamara, who I believe got injured in their game or something. I don't know what transpired there, but Derrick Henry, he's been an absolute unit so far. Saquon Barkley, despite having a bye week the week before, keeps his number 3 spot, you know, even only getting 7 points this week. Oh my gosh, it was so abysmal. You know, the Browns defense is just super talented, though. He keeps his number 3 spot. Kyren Williams with a Rams bye, still at 4. Chuba Hubbard, number 5 running back now. Jumping 2 spots. I mean, come on. The Panthers suck, but Chuba Hubbard is an absolute gem. Jordan Mason dropping down to 6. 49ers, of course, running back. He's hurt right now, I believe. Don't know if he's going to be playing. At number 7, Breece Hall. Welcome to the top 10, Breece Hall. It's about time. You were the number 2 running back going off the board, finally catching some strides. At number 8, Bijan Robinson, jumping up from number 9 last week. Good stuff from the Falcons running back. David Montgomery, now at number 9. David Montgomery is passing up Jahmyr Gibbs for the best running back in Detroit. It's incredible. And at number 10, from the Bears, the former Lions running back, DeAndre Swift. He is on a streak of 20-point games. It's been 3 straight games now. I mean, holy cow, this Bears team surprisingly good this year. Checking out the wide receivers, Chris Godwin, after another massive week, jumps 5 spots. He is now your number 1 fantasy football wide receiver. Incredible. Incredible. And people were saying Mike Evans. I'd have thought Mike Evans would have been wide receiver 1. Heck no. Chris Godwin is Baker's favorite target. And number 2, Jamar Chase. He drops a spot. Nico Collins, despite missing this week, had so many points over the start of the year. He's still at number 3. Jayden Reed at 4. He is dealing with an injury, I believe. Drake London moving up 2 spots to 2. I mean, Kirko Chains has found his guy, and it's Drake London. Stephon Diggs jumping up 2 spots to number 6 with Nico out. Stephon Diggs is CJ's number one man. At number 7, Garrett Wilson. He wasn't ranked last week. He's now ranked as the number 7 wide receiver. I was going to say running back for some reason. But yeah, but with some new news. We're going to talk about the Jets later. Davante Adams has joined the Jets. So Garrett Wilson, your target share may drop. And number 8, Justin Jefferson, he drops 5 spots. We had a bye week, okay? Don't worry. Justin Jefferson will be back up there. CeeDee Lamb, now finally ranked at number 9, despite being blown out this week. He was the only bright spot for the Cowboys team this past week. And Malik Nabers, you know, best rookie wide receiver so far this year. Dropped 6 spots. He's now at number 10. It's because he's been out now for a week or two. So he'll be back. Checking out tight end George Kittle. Had a great Thursday Night Football performance. We'll mention him in just about a second. He jumps up 1 spot. Brock Bowers, best rookie tight end, I should be saying. I phrased that weird. He's at number 2, but I mean, him and Kittle, they're going to flip-flop all year. Cole Kmet jumping 3 spots, having a massive weekend. Caleb Williams loves him a little, Cole Kmet. Trey McBride, 6-spot jump from 10 to 4. Trey McBride, your number 4 fantasy tight end. Kyler Murray connecting with him. He was projected to be in the top 5. He is so far. Tucker Kraft dropping 2 spots. Jordan Love was not really feeling Tucker Kraft in their weekly matchup this week with the who did they play? I can't even remember who the Packers beat. We're going to be covering it in a second. Who did the Packers beat? Oh no, we'll be talking about them in a second, but Tucker Kraft was not getting involved. Isaiah Likely at number 6, he drops 1 spot from last week. I mean, look, he's not even tight end 1. You know, it's comical. Dallas Goedert drops 3 spots to 7. Jalen Hurts not feeling him. Pratt Freiermuth drops 1 spot to 8. Kyle Pitts now ranked at number 9. Kirko Chains having a good time with Kyle Pitts. Jake Ferguson drops 1 spot because the Cowboys suck. He was at 10. Defensive-wise, Vikings, they were out, but they still remain at number 2. They do drop down a spot as the Bears take over the top defensive spot. Packers at 3. That's right. 3 of the 4 defenses in the NFC North are the top 3 defenses. Incredible. Broncos dropped 2 spots to 2 after giving up quite a lot of points this past week. Steelers jumped 2 spots to number 5. Impressive. 49ers down 1 to 6 from last week. Giants up 1 to 7. Pretty good. Jets, they're at 8. They are going down 2 spots. They gave up a lot of points to the Bills. Chargers remain at number 9 from last week. And the Texans, come on, is the number 10 defense in the league. Kicker-wise, Brandon Aubrey, he's been here all year. Number 1 kicker. Ain't going to change. Scored the only points for the Cowboys. They had 9 points, all from Brandon Aubrey. Chris Boswell having a massive 17-point performance for the Steelers, +3. He's the number 2 kicker in the league. Kai Fairbairn drops down 1 to 3. Young Hukou remains at 4. Austin Siebert for the Commanders, despite losing, jumping up 2 spots to 5. Chase McLaughlin remains at 6 from the Buccaneers. Jake Moody drops down 4 spots. You know, he's ranked number 7, but he's actually hurt currently. When he's in, one of the best kickers in the league for the 49ers. Will Lutz from Denver jumping up 1 spot to 8. And Blake Grupp from the Saints. He's at number 9. And Justin Tucker, it's about damn time. Justin Tucker used to be the best kicker in the league. Finally on at number 10. Been a long time coming. A lot of shockers. Biggest shocker, I would say, I mean, it's going to be the fact that Jaden Daniels is the number 3 fantasy QB in the league. He's been super impressive. He's been looking amazing. Okay, I just want to add that. He's been looking amazing. This Commanders team, they've been trying to do the best they can. We'll see what they can do the rest of the year. One last note, fantasy football-wise, I do want to touch on is that Amari Cooper was traded from the Browns to the Bills. That's right. Josh Allen finally has his guy, Amari Cooper, Josh Allen. The connection there is going to be immaculate. I'm excited to see that. I really am excited to see that. So Davante Adams on the move, Amari Cooper on the move, both getting much better quarterbacks. Upgrades everywhere around. The biggest losers you're going to see are pretty much everyone else on the Bills. They're going to get overcast. And Garrett Wilson, we'll see how he feels with a veteran in Davante Adams joining the mix. Now, before we dive into week number 6 recap of the football season, I do want to touch on top 10 new things in pop culture, because we got to do it. Guys, we got to go over the top 10 new things in pop culture. Starting off, all right, this one's wacky. This one's wonky. I don't even know what to make of this, but Al Pacino says his 16-month son lives with his ex and not with him, but they still find time to communicate regularly. He does text me. from time to time. I don't think Al Pacino is all there. Too much cocaína back in the 80s and 90s. I mean, he is, look, Al Pacino's in his 80s. I think he's like 84 or something, and he has a son. He has a son. I can't believe that. I can't believe that. He had a son about a year ago. But hey, I was just watching Heat. Al Pacino's in that. One of the best actors out there. That's how we're starting things off so far. Pretty goofy, though. Pretty goofy, though, if I'm being honest. Number two, there's some good ones that you hopefully want to get to, but they have just so many new information. So much new information, they're always dropping. Number four, first poster for Carry On, starring Taron Egerton, Jason Bateman, and Danielle Deadwyler. The thriller follows a TSA agent who's blackmailed into letting a dangerous package slip through security on Christmas Day. Coming to Netflix soon, trailer releases tomorrow. Ooh, I love Taron Egerton. I love Jason Bateman. Count me in. Carry On, TSA agent letting a dangerous package slip through security on Christmas Day, and then he has to find him before the flight takes off. Hey, I'm in for it. Number three, here it is, a new look at Invincible's new suit for Invincible Season 3. Invincible Season 3 releases February 6th on Amazon Prime. I'm so pumped. Invincible, one of my favorite shows out there. I mean, I can't believe it. No mid-season break this time either. No month-long break. They're just going to run 8 episodes back to back to back. Invincible, Mark Grayson, holy cow. One of my favorite shows out there. And I don't like animated shows. Truly, I'm against animated shows. Watch Invincible. An amazing show. You don't even like superheroes. The plot telling, the storytelling, it is so fire. One of the best shows out there. One of the best shows out there. I encourage it. First look at Scott Derrickson's The Gorge, starring Anya Taylor-Joy and Miles Teller. The survivor thriller follows two snipers, one American, the other Russian, stationed in separate watchtowers to safeguard the world from a mysterious evil. What? Sorry, what? Ooh, my gosh, there's like a giant monster claw or something. An Apple original film coming to Apple TV+. Why am I entertained? Why am I in on this? Why do I want to see Miles Teller and Anya Taylor-Johnson in a lone watchtower sniping evil creatures? Why am I interested in that? Hollywood, maybe you are. Maybe you do got your gig back, because I kind of rock with that. Number five, reported voice cast for the video game anthology series Secret Level. Some of the top voices is the voice of Kratos, the voice of Keanu Reeves, the voice of the guy from Ghost of Tsushima, and Patrick Schwarzenegger, Argo Schwarzenegger, a lot of different guys. Kevin Hart, wow, I don't even know what any of the freaking stuff this is. My bad. I don't even know. Number six, one of the creepy smiling people for Smile 2 broke character at yesterday's Dodgers versus Mets game, starting to laugh. But yeah, Smile 2 is in full effect. It looks weird. I'll be honest, it looks really, really weird. I don't know if I'm going to see it. I didn't see the first one because it deals with demons, and I don't really like demons. Not a big demon guy, more of an angel guy, more of a Jesus guy. It's just my opinion on things. Number seven, Joker 2 will release on digital on October 29th, less than a month after its theatrical release. Yeah, Joker 2, massive failure. This is what happens when directors just completely go away from what the people want, completely go back on what they did with their first films, and they have to reap the cause of what they sowed. I have no idea how to phrase things, but they lost around $200 million. For the film's theatrical run. They lost $200 million in running this film at the theater. It's ridiculous. Number eight, Harrison Ford on joining the Marvel Cinematic Universe. I'm just there on a weekend pass. I'm a sailor new to this town. Show me the way to go home. Look, I've never seen someone capitalize more on being a good actor and making money than Harrison Ford, because he could care less about lore for Indiana Jones, less about lore for Star Wars, and less about the MCU. He's there to catch a bag, there to portray a character, and honestly, I can't even hate. Like, if I was him, I'd be doing the same thing, so respect to him. Number nine, Greta Gerwig has reportedly been raising concerns about not getting a theatrical release for her Narnia movies. What? Narnia was not in the theaters. That just came straight to home. I didn't even know that. Weren't they high-budget movies, too? I don't even know. That's weird. I actually did not know that. Fun fact. And finally, number 10. Here's a fun one. The final Conjuring movie has begun filming. It will hit theaters September 5th, 2025. I mean, I don't really like the other Conjuring movies. They're kind of spooky, guys. But honestly, I'll watch one more. You know, I've watched the others. Not big on horror movies. Okay, I actually hate horror movies. They conjure up evil spirits. And I don't really like evil spirits. I like good spirits. I like being positive. But the Conjuring, you know, I remember watching it in the basement with my cousins, and we're like, this isn't creepy, and they're like casually watching. I'm like hiding under the blanket, like, ah, get that shit off my TV, I absolutely hate this. Pretty comical, pretty funny, but I had a good time. But yeah, those are your top 10 new things in pop culture. A lot of stuff always happening, some good, some bad, a lot of exciting stuff to watch. I currently don't have anything to watch though, so I will have to find something. So if anyone has a good show recommendation, I only have Amazon Prime and HBO Max. That's all I own to my name. But hey, it serves its purpose well. But with that, ladies and gentlemen, let's get into our week 6 NFL recap. Try and make this short and sweet because I really want to talk about UFC. So if we want to look at week 6, we kick things off 49ers and the Seahawks, little divisional matchup on Thursday Night Football. And crazy enough, 49ers win 36-24. Your top fantasy performers from that game, you had Brock Purdy with 24.1, George Kittle with 22.8, and Deebo Samuel Sr., 20.7 for the 49ers. Kenneth Walker, 20.9 for the Seahawks, a 16.5 for Tyler Lockett, and 12.48 for Geno Smith. But yeah, 36 points from the 49ers. Very impressive. 49ers now sitting at 3-3. They've passed up the Seahawks, who are also 3-3. 162 points for, 130 points against, a plus 32-point differential. 49ers coming off a big win. As for the Seahawks, three-game losing streak. They started out the year 3-0. They've lost three straight. It's been abysmal, including dropping two at home. Not good for the Seahawks. 49ers, though, I mean, in that game, Brock Purdy, 255 yards, three touchdowns. He was balling. Jordan Mason, nine rushes, 73 yards, did get injured. So in came the backup running back for him, Gorendo, 10 rushes, 99 yards. Good for you, sir. Purdy even ran for 19 yards. How about that? Kittle, five catches, 58 yards, two touchdowns. Deebo, three catches, 102 yards and one touchdown, led the way. Brandon Ayuk, two catches, 37 yards. And Juwan Jennings, three catches, 27 yards. Not much going on with those guys. But hey, Deebo and Kittle, putting everyone on their back. As for the Seahawks, Geno Smith, 30 for 52. This boy had 52 passing attempts. 312 yards, one touchdown, two picks. It was a no-fly zone. Kenneth Walker on 14 rushes, only 32 yards. Did get a touchdown, though. Tyler Lockett, four catches, 65 yards for a touchdown. Noah Fant, six catches, 63 yards. Jackson Smith and Jigba, five catches, 53 yards. Kenneth Walker, eight catches, 37 yards. And DK, three catches, 48 yards. Everyone was getting a little love. But yeah, 49ers looking dominant as always. Massive one with the Chiefs coming up. I can't wait to cover that game. That should definitely be Sunday Night Football. That should not be a 3:30 game. 49ers, top of the division. Seahawks in second. We'll see how the season transpires, but this doesn't shock me too much. Seahawks start off to a fast start. They now have a minus 4-point differential. No momentum in the entire world. But actually, do they have a bye? Actually, I have this written down. Do the Seahawks play again this week? No, the Seahawks actually, they play the Falcons. Oh, so tough going if you're a Seahawks fan. But good win for the 49ers. After that, we headed to London as the Jaguars took on the Bears. And I can't lie, guys, all the stats were telling me the Jaguars should win. And the Jaguars just straight up suck. Okay, they suck so hard. They lose 35-16. Holy cow, abysmal. Bears are now 4-2. Jacksonville, one of the worst, if not the worst team in the league, 1-5 with a minus 65-point differential. They're 0-4 on the road. Gabe Davis, 21.5, your top fantasy performer for the Jaguars. Evan Ingram in his return game, 18.2, and T-Law, 17.06. As for the Bears, Caleb Williams, your number one draft pick, could be the best rookie in the draft class. We'll have to see. Jaden Daniels started off hot, but Caleb Williams, 28.6 for fantasy points. He was looking phenomenal. Cole Kmet, 24, and DeAndre Swift, 21.9. Looking immaculate, fellas. Looking really immaculate. 35 points. Oh, my goodness. On a roll for the Bears. Seven touchdowns. Nope. Not seven touchdowns, Zachary. What is seven times five? 35. They got five touchdowns. Trevor Lawrence for the Jaguars. 234 yards, two touchdowns, and a pick. Yikes. Tank Bigsby. Actually, Travis Etienne got hurt on his third rush of the game. Bigsby was held only 24 yards. D'Ernest Johnson, 28 yards on six carries. Just rough. All around rough. Ingram, 10 catches, 102 yards, was the only good stuff, along with Gabe Davis, 5 catches, 45 yards for two touchdowns. Brian Thomas Jr., only 3 catches, 27 yards, helping me lose in fantasy. Damn it, Brian. You're still my favorite rookie wide receiver. Don't tell anyone else, though. All right? Just between you and me. As for the Chicago Bears, I mean, Jaguars, we'll mention right now, 1-5, bottom of the AFC South. They're probably the worst team in the league. They might be worse than the Panthers. They're that bad. The Bears, 4-2, are third in the AFC North. That's just how freaking good we are, guys. All right. 4-0 on home, 0-2 on the road. Bears looking phenomenal because this counted as a home game for the Bears, I'm pretty sure. Caleb Williams, 226 yards, 4 touchdowns, and 1 pick. DeAndre Swift, 91 rushing yards for a touchdown. Cole Kmet caught 2 touchdowns. Keenan Allen caught 2 touchdowns. Romo Odunze caught 2 catches for 40 yards, with DJ Moore only catching 4 passes for 20 yards. That's right, Cole Kmet and Keenan Allen leading the day. Good stuff for the Bears. I'll be excited to see what they do. Actually, they have a bye next week. Do the Jaguars have a bye? Jaguars play the Patriots again in London. I just remembered that. So, yeah, Jaguars will stay in London. I'm going to pick them to beat the Patriots. Spoiler alert. I really hope they do. But Bears, man, 3-game win streak. Looking phenomenal. 47-point differential. They've been looking good. Caleb Williams finally connecting with his team. Keeping us moving, we go to the noon slot on Sunday, where the Texans kick things off with a blowout of the Patriots, 41-21. Holy cow. Texans were in go mode. 5-1 to start out the year. 3-game win streak. 3-0 at home. They're looking phenomenal. As for the Pats, you know, Drake May started this game, and despite being 1-5, despite having one of the worst offenses in the entire league, only 83 points for, haven't won a home game, they're on a 5-game losing streak, Drake May looked damn good. Okay, I'm going to just go right out and say it. Drake May looked like a top draft pick. Joe Mixon, 27.2 fantasy points. Stephon Diggs, 19.7. Tank Dell, 18.7. DeMario Douglas, 21.2 for the Pats. Drake May, in his first NFL game, 19.52 fantasy points. I'm going to say it. That's pretty freaking good. All right, they managed to get 3 touchdowns. Not too bad. CJ Stroud for the Texans, 192 yards, 3 touchdowns, 1 interception. Can't lie. Could probably do a bit better than that. Rushing-wise, Joe Mixon, in his return, 13 rushes, 102 yards, 1 touchdown. He was a baller. They took him out at the end of the game. They're like, all right, we'll put Damian Pierce in. Damian Pierce, 8 rushes, 76 yards, 1 touchdown, including a 50-yard touchdown run. Damian Pierce looking good. Stephon Diggs, 6 catches, 77 yards, a touchdown. Tank Dell, 7 catches, 57 yards, a touchdown. Joe Mixon, 2 catches, 30 yards, a second touchdown for him. Looking phenomenal. This Texans team, they're damn good. Patriots, Drake May, 243 yards, threw for 3 touchdowns, did throw 2 picks. All right, the rookie picks, they'll always get you. Not too bad. Antonio Gibson, 13 rushing attempts, only 19 yards. Holy cow, that Texans defensive line, it was a no running zone, no driving zone. It wasn't no fly zone today, it was a no driving zone. Incredible. Only good wide receiver, DeMario Douglas, 6 catches, 92 yards, 1 interception. If you're the Pats, you know, you're going to London, Drake May, you know, lock in, you got to get it done. But the Texans, tough one with the Packers coming up. That should be one of the better games of next week. Keeping us moving, we had one of the better games, one of the matchups of quarterbacks I was talking about, Lamar Jackson, Jaden Daniels, and lo and behold, I knew it would come true, the Ravens prevailed. 30-23, Commanders almost rallied though. I will give the Commanders the benefit of the doubt. Jaden Daniels almost led a rally on the Ravens, but I mean, Lamar Jackson and Derrick Henry, too freaking good. 30-23, Terry McLaurin, 23.3 fantasy points for the Commanders. Jane Daniels, 20.96, and Austin Siebert, the kicker, 14. As for the Ravens, Derrick Henry, 25, Zay Flowers, 22, and Lamar, 18.92. Ravens, 4-2, 177 points scored on the year, 4-game winning streak. Yeah, they're red hot. Commanders, only their second loss of the year, 4-2. Still have a 178 points for, you know, 2-0 at home. I don't think this was an awful performance by any means. I really don't. Jane Daniels, 269 yards, 2 touchdowns. Didn't even turn the ball over. Austin Eckler, 9 rushes, 21 yards. Jane Daniels, 6 rushes, 22 yards. Yeah, it's rough running backs, all right? Eckler, not the best. Austin Eckler's fall off really needs to be studied. But Jane Daniels, keeping him going on the ground. Zach Ertz, 4 catches, 68 yards, led the day receiving-wise. But, I mean, the best wide receiver was Scary Terry. 6 catches, 53 yards, 2 touchdowns. He was a baller. So, you still got some goodness there. Scary Terry, him and Jane, they got a little connection. Lamar, 323 yards, 20 for 26. 1 touchdown, 1 interception, 11 rushes for 40 yards. Derrick Henry, 132 yards rushing, two touchdowns. He was a killer. Zay Flowers, 9 catches, 132 yards. Rashad Bateman, 4 catches, 71 yards. Mark Andrews, 3 catches, 66 yards. And he caught the first touchdown of the season for himself. Good job, Mark. Really good job. Ravens, they got a tough one with the Bucks coming up. I believe that might actually be on Monday night. Funny enough, Monday Night Football, Ravens and Bucks. As for the Commanders, they will take on the Panthers. And I know Jayden Daniels is going to exact all of his anger out on that Panthers team. Don't worry, Commanders and Ravens both still lead their divisions. After that, one of the more boring games of week number 6, Eagles taking on the Browns, 20-16. You missed nothing in this game. You missed absolutely nothing. Dustin Hopkins, 11 fantasy points. The only good thing for the Browns in this game. Eagles, what do you know? A.J. Brown, 23.6 in his return game. Jalen Hurts, 21.86. Devontae Smith, 15.4. Yeah. Yeah. This Eagles team is good. 3-2. Second in the NFC East, but they have played one less game than the Commanders. They should be all right. Someone did point out to me that Jalen Hurts is worse with Kelce not behind him at center, or not in front of him at center, and they're not wrong. They honestly aren't wrong there, but I'll tell you who's worse, and that is the Browns. 1-5, 4-game losing streak, only have put up 95 points this whole year. Something's got to change. Something's definitely got to change. Deshaun Watson, 168 yards, that's it. That's all he freaking did, 168 yards. Deontay Foreman, 10 rushes, 31 yards. That's it. Amari Cooper, 4 catches, 42 yards. He was begging to get out of there. Look, this Browns offense had absolutely nothing. Hopkins scored all their points. Hopkins scored all their freaking points. This was abysmal. Jalen Hurts, 264 yards, 2 touchdowns. Had himself a nice little day. Saquon, only 47 yards on 18 rushes. That Browns front line, dominant as ever. Hurts actually had 33 yards. He rushed 14 times, crazy enough. AJ, 6 catches, 116 yards and a touchdown. Devontae, 3 catches, 64 yards and a touchdown. And the tight end, Calcaterra, 4 catches, 67 yards. Getting involved. Dallas Goedert, not a single catch. Eagles, keep it going. Keep it moving, Eagles. I don't really know what to tell you. Take on the Giants next week. Always a tough divisional matchup there. As for the Browns, oh gosh, if you're a Browns fan, just cut your losses, man. Take on the Bengals next week. Yikes. No words. No comment. You're probably going to lose. Packers and Cardinals. Fun matchup there is a Jordan Love fantasy starter. I mean, he was balling. Good win for the Packers. 34-13. Trey McBride, 17 fantasy points. Kyler Murray, 11.96. Emery Demarcado, 11.4. You know, didn't really get anything going offensively. As for the Packers, Jordan Love, 25. Romeo Doubs, 20. Christian Watson, 15. They were balling. They were looking phenomenal out there. Packers, like I said, NFC North is too damn good. They're 4-2, and they're the bottom. 4-2, and they're the bottom of the NFC North. 2-game win streak, I might add. They have just, they're off to a hot start. I can't lie. Cardinals, 2-4, third in the NFC West. That division is open to be won. I will throw that out there. Kyler Murray, 214 yards and a touchdown. James Conner, 24 yards rushing. He did nothing. Trey McBride, 8 catches, 96 yards. The only good thing for that Cardinals team. There wasn't much good. There wasn't much good for that Cardinals team. I would not expect much out of them going forward. They do take on the Chargers, Monday Night Football. Maybe they'll get a win next week. We'll have to see. Packers-wise, Jordan Love, 258 yards, 4 touchdowns, 1 pick, balla. Josh Jacobs, 18 rushes, 62 yards, kind of held in check. Holy cow, he threw to 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 different people. Yeah. He was spreading the ball all around. Packers just have such depth at wide receiver. It's hard to start someone. But Romeo Doubs, he caught a touchdown, 19.9 fantasy points. He was doing pretty good. Packers, fun one with the Texans next week. Should be one of the better games if you want to watch one. After that, the highest scoring team so far. I don't think it's this season. I think we had someone else drop 50. But certainly this week, Buccaneers win 51-27 over the Saints. I mean, holy bananas. Buccaneers went off. Chris Godwin, 35.5 fantasy points. Sean Tucker, the backup back, the third string running back, getting a go here, 34.2 fantasy points. Baker Mayfield, 25.9. There was no stopping Baker and the Bucks. They were on a roll. As for the Saints, Alvin Kamara, 17.4. Means some wide receiver, 15.5. Might have been a running back. I don't even know what he did. And Spencer Rattler in his start, 12.42. I've seen worse. I'll give you that, Spencer. I've seen worse. Buccaneers 4-2 are second in the NFC South. Saints 2-4 are in third. And they are on a 4-game losing streak, though, so not too good if you're a Saints fan. Saints in this one. Actually, we'll start with the Buccaneers. Buccaneers, Baker Mayfield, 325 yards, 4 touchdowns, 3 picks. Dude, he's just letting the ball fly. There's any chance he could. Bucky Irving and Sean Tucker both rushed 14 times. Bucky Irving, 81 yards a touchdown. Sean Tucker, 136 yards a touchdown. Absolutely insane. Chris Godwin, 11 catches, 125 yards and 2 touchdowns. He was balling. The running back Tucker, 3 catches, 56 yards and a touchdown. By the way, Mike Evans, 2 catches, 34 yards, was barely even looked at. Barely even looked at. They don't even need you. 51 points put up. That's just ridiculous. That is utterly ridiculous, if you ask me. As for the Saints, Spencer Rattler, 243 yards, 1 touchdown, and 2 picks. The rookie QB is always throwing their picks. Kamara, 13 rushes, 40 yards, and a touchdown. Did what he had to. I mean, Foster Moreau, 2 catches, 54 yards. Means, the wide receiver, caught a touchdown. I mean, Saints, it was rough. It was rough. Buccaneers, second best team in the division. Them and the Falcons, it's going to be a battle between those two. And the Buccaneers, they get a fun one coming up next week as they take on, I believe, are they on a bye? Are the Buccaneers really on a bye? Oh my gosh, the Buccaneers are on a bye next week. How about that? But no rest. No rest for their opponent, the Saints. Saints will take on the Broncos on Thursday Night Football. Getting after it. Colts and Titans having a little divisional battle for you in the AFC and another new matchup for you. Colts 3-3 now. Titans 1-4 as the Colts win 20-17. This was a close matchup. Josh Downs, 19.5. Best fantasy score for the Colts. Tony Pollard, 17.8. The only double-digit fantasy score for the Titans. I feel bad for DeAndre Hopkins. Get out of there, DeAndre. Get out of there. Joe Flacco, 189 yards, 2 touchdowns, and interception, filling in for the injured Anthony Richardson. Trey Goodson, backup running back, 8 rushes, 51 yards, looking good. Down, 7 catches, 66 yards, and a touchdown. Michael Pittman, 3 catches, 35 yards. He finally caught a touchdown. Good job, Michael. Other than that, average performance for everyone else on this Colts team. Just had to get a win. Yes, had to get a win. As for the Titans, Will Levis, 95 yards on 16 completions. 1 touchdown, 1 pick. He is bad. Will Levis is bad. I think he was pushed too hard, pushed too much to the top. Not looking too good. Tony Pollard, 17 rushes, 93 yards and a touchdown. He looked good. DeAndre Hopkins, 4 catches, 54 yards. Yeah, Titans are in a rough spot. They take down the Bills next week, who are looking better than ever. Yeah, it's rough going. As for the Colts, they take on the Dolphins. Very winnable game right there as the Dolphins are coming off a bye. So we'll see how they do. After that, Chargers and Broncos. They were loving the divisional games this week in the AFC East as the Chargers win 23-16. But I do want to point out the Chargers were up 23-0, so the Broncos did almost complete a rally. Broncos 3-3, Chargers 3-2. Very good. J.K. Dobbins, 18 fantasy points, best player for the Chargers. Bo Nix, 20 fantasy points, best player for the Broncos. What do you know? Rookie QBs getting it done. Herbert, 237 yards and a touchdown. Average day for him. J.K. Dobbins, 25 rushes, 96 yards and a touchdown. Holy jamoly. Ladd McConkey, 43 yards on 4 catches. Yeah. Not really, no. Done on the ground. Done on the ground for the Chargers. As for the Broncos, Bo Nix, 216 yards, 2 touchdowns. Of course, a pick. Bo Nix rushed 6 times for 61 yards. Cortland Sutton, 4 catches, 53 yards for 8 touchdown. Good win for the Broncos, or for the Chargers, I mean. Broncos almost won. I thought the Broncos were going to win, but I guess they aren't. Broncos, we take on the Saints, like they mentioned. Chargers will go to Monday night to take on the Cardinals. Tough game for both of them. That will be a tough game for both of them. I expect that. Steelers and Raiders did battle. Next up, Steelers won 32-13. Justin Fields, 23.7 fantasy points. The Steelers looked great. 4-2 now, second in the AFC North. Steelers looked great. They've only given up 86 points so far this year. That is the second or third best defense in the league. I think there's only like 4 teams that have actually given up under, actually there's like 6 teams, 5 teams that have given up under 100 points so far this year. Steelers in the better half of them. Steelers have been looking good. Najee Harris, 20.2, and like I mentioned, Chris Boswell, the kicker, 17 fantasy points. An absolute dime. Madison for the Raiders, the only good part, 17.5, and my sweetie, Brock Bowers, 16.1. As for Pittsburgh, you know, I mean, Justin Fields, 145 yards. Didn't really do it through the air. It was on the ground, 59 yards rushing, 2 touchdowns. Najee, 106 yards rushing, 1 touchdown. They're the highlights of the damn. Sorry, George Pickens. No one's passing to you. Justin Fields is a runner. Aiden O'Connell, 227 yards, 1 touchdown, 1 interception. Not looking good. All right, I'll be honest. He's just an average starting QB. Madison, 33 rushes, 1 touchdown. Brock Bowers, the best player out there. 9 catches, 71 yards. He is a target machine. I love me a little Brock Bowers. I'm excited for the Raiders team this year. I really am. They take on the Rams next week. 3:05. Should be a fun one for you. Steelers take on the Jets in Sunday Night Football. After that, we got into, I believe it was our second to last, or maybe it was our, was it our last game? No, second to last for 3:30 as the Lions blow out the Cowboys in shocking fashion. 47-9. Unreal. Lions are now 151 points for 91 points against. 3-game winning streak, second in the AFC North. They look deadly. Jared Goff, 25 fantasy points. David Montgomery, 21. The kicker, Jesse Bates, 19. Oh my goodness. They were just phenomenal out there, honestly, everywhere. CeeDee Lamb, 16.1. Brandon Aubrey, 12. The only good points for this Cowboys team. The defense was cooked. Defense got like negative 10 points. I swear, it was abysmal. Jared Goff, 315 yards, 3 touchdowns, balled out. They actually put in Hendon Hooker for 2 plays. How about that? David Montgomery, 12 rushes, 80 yards, 2 touchdowns. Jahmyr Gibbs, 12 rushes, 63 yards. Khalif Raymond, 4 catches, 73 yards. Jamison Williams, 3 catches, 76 yards. Tim Patrick, 3 catches, 60 yards. It goes on and on and on. Amon-Ra caught a touchdown. Laporta caught a touchdown. Everyone was sharing the load. This Lions team is a beauty. Lions team's an absolute booty. They take on the Minnesota Vikings next week. We ride with the Vikings. But hey, going to be a tough one. Lions looked great. On the other hand, the Cowboys, now 3rd in the NFC East, 3-3, 0-3 at home, not been good. It has not been good to be a Cowboys fan. Dak, 178 yards, 2 picks, got benched in the 4th. Cooper Rush came in, 46 yards and a pick. He couldn't even do anything. Rico Dowdle, 5 rushes, 25 yards. Ezekiel Elliott, 8 rushes, 17 yards. Them boys couldn't do a single thing. CeeDee Lamb, 7 catches, 89 yards. The only upside for this Cowboys team. I don't even know where to say it went wrong. They just have no mojo. The Cowboys need their mojo back, and they're going to need it sooner rather than later. They do get a bye, a much-needed bye coming up. I mean, goodness, just wow, just roughness all around if you're a Cowboys fan. Checking out one last time in the NFC South as the Falcons took on the Panthers, 38-20. Wasn't even close. Kind of close early, but no, not close after that. Falcons 4-2 now. Panthers 1-5. Panthers yet to win at home. 3-game win streak for the Falcons. They've been balling. Bijan 19.5 fantasy points. Ty Allgeier 19.8. Drake London 19.4. But for the Panthers, 19.8 for Deontay, 15.3 for Chuba. 15 for Andy Dalton, not even that bad. They're just not as good. Atlanta, 225 yards and a touchdown for Kirk. Allgeier, 105 yards, touchdown. Bijan on the ground, 95 yards, touchdown. Drake London caught a touchdown. Kyle Pitts actually had a 50-yard catch in this game. Very impressive. Falcons, great win here. Did what they needed to get done. They'll take on the Seahawks next week at home. Regroup, recoup, and have a little battle of the birds, Falcons and Seahawks. Panthers, they're just not any better than last year. They might even be a bit worse. 1-5. Oh, man. Andy Dalton, 221 yards, 2 touchdowns, 2 picks. Chuba, 92 yards rushing on 18 carries. Deontay Johnson, 6 catches, 78 yards and a touchdown. It's just not enough. Xavier Leggett caught a touchdown, but it's just not going to be enough. They just don't have the star power other teams have. Panthers, we'll see how you guys do against the Commanders next week. I expect a Jaden Daniels massacre. Panthers, maybe you'll get a number one pick next year. I don't even know. We then got into Sunday Night Football, ladies and gentlemen. You may ask, Zach, was it super exciting? Nope. 17-7, Bengals win. It was boring. I stopped watching. I said no interest in this. Joe Burrow, 19.82 fantasy points. T. Higgins, 14.7. As for the Giants, 22.7 for Tracy Jr., the running back. Daniel Jones, 11.8. Yikes. Giants are now 2-4, yet to win at home. Bengals, second win of the season. Good win, boys. By the way, 2-4 for the Bengals, a +5 point differential. They've been in some close games. Joe Shiesty, 208 yards, didn't throw a touchdown pass. T. Higgins did catch 7 catches for 77 yards. Jamar, 5 catches, 72 yards. It was done on the ground. Joe Burrow ran for a touchdown, actually a 50-yard touchdown. And Chase Brown, 10 rushes, 53 yards, and a touchdown himself. Bengals doing what they must to get the victory. They take on the Browns next week. Very winnable game there for them. I wish them luck. As for the Giants, Daniel Jones at home, 205 yards and a touchdown. Not enough. 56 yards rushing. Tracy Jr., 17 rushes, 50 yards and a touchdown, and caught 6 catches for 57 yards. Vandell Robinson, 5 catches, 50 yards. Darius Slayton, 6 catches, 57 yards. With no Malik Nabers, they do not look as good as they should. Giants, crappy team. Bengals, just, I cannot believe the Bengals aren't good. The Bengals have all the tools to be good. T. Higgins and Jamar Chase can carry anyone. Them and Joe Burrow, that's all you need. The little triumphant trio, if you want to call them. And with that, we got into our lone Monday Night Football game to round out week number 6. And it was the Bills beating the Jets in New York, 23-20. New York as in the Jets were the home team. 2-4 now for the Jets on a 3-game losing streak. Bills, 4-2, the best team in the AFC East. Josh Allen, 24 fantasy points. Ray Davis, the running back, 18.2. Dalton Kincaid, 11.1. As for the Jets, the best part, Garrett Wilson, 24.7. Alan Lazard, 23.4. And Breece Hall, 21.9. They played so good. This was so even. And it just came down to the end, and the Jets couldn't convert. They actually fumbled, I think it was, to lose the game. Josh Allen, 19 for 25, 215 yards and 2 touchdowns. And he even rushed in a touchdown. He was balling. Ray Davis, 20 rushes, 97 yards. Matt Collins got a tutty. Dawson Knox got a tutty. Dalton Kincaid, 6 catches, 51 yards. Bills look good. Bills look good here. Close win. Divisional rival. Take on the Titans next week. Bills are in a good spot. And they get Amari Cooper. Who doesn't love a little Amari Cooper? Jets, you know, they're really searching for an answer. Devontae Adams might be that answer. The Jets will take on the Steelers in prime time. Rodgers had 294 yards, 2 touchdowns, and a pick. The picks are really hurting Rodgers. Breece Hall, 18 rushes, 113 yards. Lazar, 114 and a touchdown. Garrett Wilson, 107 receiving yards and a touchdown. Look, it's just Bills just need to figure it out. Bills just need to figure out what needs to be done, what needs to be accomplished, and how do we get there? How do we get there? Or the Jets need to. Bills play the level of their opponent. They always have, they always will. Unless the team's really bad, then they'll blow them out. Courtesy the game earlier this year when they blew out the Panthers, it was? Bills blew out someone. Can't even remember. But that's your Week 6 recap. It was a decent week. Decent week, I'll give them that. Decent week. NFL had a couple good games. My Vikings weren't playing, so I didn't really care that much. But now, guys, let's get into our UFC Vegas 98 recap. Got a lot of stuff to talk about there. A lot of fun fights, too. I mean, we had some good fights this past weekend. We had some bad fights. We had some cool finishes. We had some not cool finishes. All sorts of stuff. Let's talk all about it. A good sign of any fight night is when you start the night off with a finish. And even though we didn't correctly predict it, we still did see Clayton Carpenter submit Lucas Rocha to kick off the evening, which honestly I was perfectly okay with. Okay, but at the time I wasn't, because I was like, oh my gosh, I predicted the first fight incorrect. I would predict the next 10 correctly, so not too bad. The only fights we predicted incorrectly on this entire card was the first fight and the last fight, which kind of leaves a weird taste in your mouth. But kicking the night off, I mean, good submission win for Clayton Carpenter, remaining undefeated. He was the favorite. His fourth career submission. Good stuff. Clayton Carpenter moves to 8-0, and he's 2-0. In the UFC so far this year, and both those wins have been my rear naked chokehold. Lucas Rocha, I mean, he got taken down in round 1 for 3 minutes and 38 seconds, got taken down at the start of round 2, got submitted. That was the name of the game. Good win for Clayton Carpenter in the men's flyweight division. A lot of flyweights out there, Clayton. A lot of flyweights out there. As for Lucas, you know, 17-2, you lose your UFC debut. I think both of these guys will be back. There was a couple other flyweights on this card. We're going to mention some guy who lost, CJ Vergara. I think that could be the next option for Clayton Carpenter. I don't know if a ranked opponent is just right for him, but good start to the night. After that, Cody Haddon took on Dan Argueta, and Cody Haddon looked phenomenal. I mean, holy cow, this guy took this fight on like 5 days' notice, okay? Was not supposed to be in this fight at all. Riding a 5-fight win streak. He had come off of Dana White's Contender Series back in August, and he gets it done. Dominates Dan Argueta across 3 rounds, and honestly, I think they should cut Dan. I think they should cut Dan. Dan is 1-3 in the UFC with 2 no contests. That's embarrassing. That is super embarrassing, if you ask me. Cody looked phenomenal wherever the fight went. He got taken down 4 times, but he defended 20 takedowns. That's right. Dan Argueta, 4 of 24 on takedown attempts. Cody Haddon goes 2 of 4 on takedown attempts, outstrikes him significantly, 140 to 54, including 64 to 27 in round number 3. This kid, Cody Haddon, looking phenomenal, 26 years young, and he was the favorite. He was the favorite. We rode with him. We knew he'd get it done, and he did. Won every single round. Dan, bye-bye. I don't want any more of you. You're not an exciting fighter. I'll add that in, too. He's not an exciting fighter. He's done drugs before. He's not a good person. Bantamweight division, getting another guy in Cody Haddon. There's tons of bantamweights out there for him to fight. 6-fight win streak, wins his UFC debut on short notice. What more could you want? No more could you want. I mean, honestly, Cody Haddon, I love you. Absolutely love you. It was just another decision. Typical Apex decision, but this time Cody Haddon looking impressive. After that, we had a women's fight. We had our lone women's fight of the evening. Julia Pollastri taking on Corey McKenna. Split decision goes to Julia Pollastri. Corey McKenna goes 1 of 6 on takedowns. 5 minutes, 20 seconds of total control time across the entire fight. Pollastri outstrikes her 142 to 98 total, 88 to 40 significantly. Pollastri clearly won round one, clearly won round two. I think it came down to round three, and that was the one round maybe McKenna could have won because she got a takedown. Other than that, I honestly had it 3-3 to rip for Julia Pollastri. Pollastri, this was expected. -150 favorite. Never been finished. She's now 1-1 in the UFC. Not too bad. Not too bad if you ask me. Corey McKenna was cut after this, unfortunately. I'm sorry, Corey. 2-fight losing streak. Went 3-3 in her UFC run. Just was never exciting. Was never exciting. I'm sorry, Corey McKenna. That's your time in the UFC. Pollastri will remain. 26 years young as well. Not too bad. Kind of a slow start to the evening. Clayton Carpenter got it going. Then those two decisions kind of slowed us down. But Pollastri, good win. Straw weights, plethora out there. Nowhere near ready for a ranked opponent. After that, heavyweight action. Heavyweights are sloppy as they are at times. I find them oh so fun. And we had Junior Taffa taking on Sean Sharaf. Sean Sharaf stepping in. Oh, he was the 5 days notice. I think that Cody Haddon stepped in on like a week's notice or 2 weeks notice. Maybe not as short, but Sean Sharaf stepping in on short notice, and he almost finished Junior Taffa in round number one. 46 significant strikes, 36, 1 of 5 on takedowns. He took him down. He was laying into him. I was so surprised. So surprised Mark Smith let this one go to the bell, but he did. He let it go to the bell. Sean almost got the win, but then round two, Sean was gassed. Junior capitalized, I won't lie. They both looked bad. They both looked so bad. They both looked like if they took on Sergey Pavlovich, Tom Aspinall, they'd lose with one punch hitting their jaw. I mean, but Junior Taffa rallies, outstrikes him 35-7. 2 minutes into round number two, knocks him out. Standing TKO. I mean, Sean was really just standing there getting punched. He'd turn away. Taffa would like put his hands up like, what are you doing? Punch him again. So goofy. He gets it done, and Junior Taffa remains in the UFC. 6-6-3. All 6 wins by knockout. Goodness me. Junior Taffa, 2-3 in the UFC. Getting it done. Sean, I'd bring him back. Honestly, I'd bring Sean Sharaf back. He's 4-1 now. Stepped in on short notice. But yeah, Junior Taffa get the victory. I don't know what to do with him, man. How about you have him fight Chris Barnett? Him and Chris Barnett were originally going to fight. I think Chris Barnett's fighting goodness knows who else at some other date. They're actually having Robeles Despaigne and Waldo Cortez Acosta. Those are two guys that could fight. Who's someone else? Robeles is taking out Austin Lane. That could be an opponent. A lot of options for Junior Taffa. He gets it done, though. It's not a surprise. It wasn't so surprise he won, but it was still pretty comical how just gassed these guys got in the 7 minutes 15 seconds this fight lasted. Junior Taffa remains in the UFC. After that, welterweight division, you know him, I love him, Themba Gorimbo dominates. Nico Price turned to the grappling in this one, attempted 2 submissions, was trying to knock him out at some points, couldn't really do it, but you know what, Themba's win streak continues. After losing his debut in February of 2023, 4-0 since. 4-fight win streak for Themba Gorimbo. 68 significant strikes to 16, 7 takedown attempts, 9 minutes of control time. Domination from Themba Gorimbo. Round two, probably the biggest fight fought on the Actually, none of this was fought on the feet. Well, four takedowns in round two for Themba. Most strikes he landed, though. He's at least going for the finish. Nico's just a hard guy to put away. Nico Price, 1-3 now in his last four. He is now, oh gosh, Nico Price has not been on a win streak since 2018. Yikes. Yeah, Nico, don't know if you're going to remain in the UFC. 16-8. Yikes. Themba, good win. Good win for Themba. I would expect nothing less from Themba Grimbadal. My 280 favorite. 33 years old, 20, 28. I mean, he's doing pretty good. From Zimbabwe, Themba Grimbadal. Domination in the grappling department here. Welterweight division, I don't know what dicks really do with you. Daniel Rodriguez won. We're going to mention him in a second. How about that? Or even Alex Morono. There's a lot of options at welterweight. But Themba, I'm happy you got it done. You know, you always get a mix of things, you know? He out-grapples Nico Price, out-grapples Ramiz Brahimaj, knocks down Takashi Soto, knocks out Pete Rodriguez. You never know what you get with Themba Grimbadal. But he has a dream to become world champion. Four-fight win streak winning here. Keeping that dream alive. Good stuff. After that, was this our final prelim? I think this was our final prelim. Pat Sabatini, this was our second last. Pat Sabatini, Jonathan Pierce. I was going to pick Jonathan Pierce and I switched to Pat Sabatini. There's like, no, there's just something about Pat. I think his grappling's better. Lo and behold, I thought this fight would go into round two and we get a submission from Pat. No. Round one, rear naked chokehold from Pat Sabatini. Took Jonathan Pierce down twice, dominated him. Fight lasted 4 minutes and 6 seconds. 3 minutes, 56 seconds of control time from Pat Sabatini. There's only 10 seconds in that round. Pat Sabatini was not in control. Domination. Domination for Pat Sabatini. That's his 13th career submission. Absolutely beautiful. And, you know, he was on a crazy win streak. Crazy win streak. You know, he was like 8 or 9 unbeaten streak, then lost to Damon Jackson. Picked up a win, lost to Diego Lopez, back in the win category. Great stuff here. You know, he's 6-2 in the UFC. He could go grapple with the best of them. I know people are bringing up Bryce Mitchell or someone he could fight next. That could actually be an option. Pat Sabatini, great win here. And actually, you know what? Screw it. You can fight Bryce Mitchell next. Why? Because I'm the matchmaker. Jonathan Pierce, 3-fight losing streak now, which is tough. Okay, this is really tough. Jonathan Pierce was at one point on a 5-fight winning streak. All right, now he's lost to Dranderson Brito, to David Onama, to Pat Sabatini. Those are three killers in the featherweight division. Jonathan, you'll remain in the UFC, but he really needs to establish how he can get better because this isn't really going to do it for him. Pierce now has been finished in 5 of his 7 losses and has been finished of those 5 times 4 by submission. So we identified the weakness and it happened. Good stuff, Pat. Excited to see what you do next. After that, we got into what is our final prelim and was our second and final performance bonus of the evening as holy cannoli, this kid, Ramazan Temuriyev. We knew we were picking him. All right, from Uzbekistan, 9-fight win streak. It's now 10. Had 10 KOs. Those 10 KOs are now 11. All right, 27 years young. Okay, he had the experience. Coming into this, 17-2. He's now 18-2. He knocked out CJ Vergara in such dominant fashion. He dropped him 3 times in 2 minutes and 50 seconds. He is averaging now more knockdowns than minutes fought in a fight. That's absolutely insane if you ask me. Ramazan Temuriyev is going to be a problem. I mean, it's like every time he touched CJ, CJ would get dropped. Okay, 23 significant strikes to 4. I just want you to know, of the 23 strikes he landed, 3 of those were knockdowns. That is a crazy stat if we look at everyone else in the UFC. I mean, look at Cody Haddon, 140 significant strikes, didn't land a single knockdown. This guy lands 23, 3 knockdowns. Vergara, I'm sorry. I knew this was going to happen to you. He just has a rough chin. CJ Vergara just has a really rough chin, and I knew it was going to happen. This has been this is the first time he's ever been knocked down. Funny enough, how about that? I don't even know how I knew that. Actually, I had Ramazan winning by submission. That's what it was. Ramazan, dominant. I mean, he popped him, dropped him, popped him, dropped him. Landed some ground and pound. Finally got it done. Ramazan, he's deadly. He's freaking deadly, you know. I don't really want to talk rankings. I don't know if we should, but there's a guy, Matt Schnell, just on the edge of the rankings. I think him and Ramazan would be a beautiful, beautiful fight. You can even do him versus Tim Elliott. I'm here. I love you, Ramazan. 10-fight win streak, 18-2. He's 27 years old. He's landed 3 knockdowns and got a round 1 knockout. Beautiful from Ramazan Temuriyev. He's probably going to get a warm welcome when he returns to Uzbekistan. With that, we finally got into the main card. I was out and about with my buddies at the old bar having a good, jolly old time. And I wasn't able to catch this fight, but Daniel Rodriguez, Alex Morono, from the stats alone, Daniel outstruck him 123-74 significantly. Landed one takedown on one attempt in the final round. And I mean, yeah, Daniel Rodriguez, classic outing. Sal D'Amato, of course, scoring it the other way as always. Sal, what are you doing? But yes, Daniel Rodriguez wins, split decision. We knew this would happen. Good stuff. 18-5 now, snaps his three-fight losing streak. His first win since September of 2022. It was a matter of time. As for Morono, two-fight losing streak, 1-3 in his last four, 2-4 in his last six. Alex Morono definitely needs a turnaround. But Daniel, getting it done. I think him and Thembo would be a great matchup. But you know, Daniel, you're getting up there in age, my buddy. 37 years old. But good win. Just a striking battle. Back and forth striking. Landing the harder shots. From the little bit I was able to catch in the rewatch, it looks like Daniel Rodriguez just got better all exchanges. Good win. Veteran welterweight. I'm sure he's going to be fed to a hungry up and cover. But this one made sense. Rodriguez Morono, excellent matchmaking in the UFC. After that, lightweight division. And holy cow. I mean, holy cow. Grant Dawson. Are you kidding me? You know, I knew he was a minus 400 favorite. But I mean, golly, he mauled Rafa Garcia. His grappling is truly... I would love to see Grant Dawson, Pat Sabatini. That's a fight I want to see. Dawson, round two, TKO. This was my favorite pick. I predicted a round two TKO. He got it in his last fight. He got it again here. Incredible. You know, his fifth career knockout. Fifth career knockout. Okay, he now has 18 finishes and 22 wins. You gotta be kidding me. You gotta be kidding me. He's so freaking good. Two-fight win streak now. Grant Dawson getting it done. Only loss now in his entire UFC run is to Bobby Green. That's not too bad. Rafa Garcia snapping his little two-fight winning streak. Yeah, this was tough. This was tough, Rafa Garcia. I can't lie. He had never been finished. He got finished here for the first time. I mean, come on. Grant Dawson took him down, and this is a guy who usually goes for a rear naked chokehold or something. Nah, he was just laying in the punches, and round two, he really dialed it up. Took him down, just laying into him. Bow, 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 bow. And total control time, 5 minutes and 9 seconds. Fight lasted 7 minutes, 42 seconds. Just shows you how much control Grant Dawson was in. 80 total strikes to 29. Grant Dawson dominant. I think he's ready for the rankings. I think we give him one more shot in the UFC rankings. You know, I don't understand why Rafael Dos Anjos is even in the lightweight rankings. I'd move him out of there. I think Grant Dawson, Benoit St. Denis is a great matchup. I think Grant Dawson, Jalen Turner is a great matchup. I think we give him opportunities. If not, there's lightweights out there. Maybe him and Jim Miller could put on a fun little fight. But hey, what do you know? A lot of lightweights out there. Grant Dawson, good win. Rafa, yikes, your brains are scrambled. After that, welterweight matchup, Chidi and Chukani, Jared Gooden. No shocker here. No shocker here. Chidi and Chukani getting it done. 35-year-old, 30-27 across the board. Unanimous decision. This one, very weird. A lot of clinch work in this one. Jared Gooden just not throwing a lot. 105 significant strikes to 20. 162 total strikes to 81. Gooden goes 2 of 8 on takedowns for 2.5 minutes. Chidi doesn't even attempt a single takedown. Gets 9 minutes, 16 seconds of control time. Where did that come from, Chidi and Chukani? 32 significant strikes to 6 in round 3. A lot of clinch work. Chidi 2-0 now at welterweight. 2-fight win streak. Doing what he needs to do. Stringing the wins together. Getting them done. You know, you can do Chidi and Chukani and Daniel Rodriguez. I actually like that fight better than Thema Garimbo versus Daniel Rodriguez. So yeah, I think Chidi should take on Daniel Rodriguez. Good fight there. As for Jared Gooden, I mean, he's looked bad here. 1-4, 1-3 now in his last four. Okay, and this was his little redemption arc in the UFC. In the UFC, he has now gone 2-5. I doubt he will be back. Just couldn't do anything. Like, I don't even know what he was doing in this fight. Chidi just had his number wherever it went. It didn't really go anywhere. So, Chidi, good win. 2-0 at welterweight. I'm happy for you. Him and Daniel Rodriguez. I like that fight a lot better. And, you know, Jared Gooden, who did he fight before him? Ryze McKee. Chidi has not fought the highest level of competition at welterweight and hasn't really, like, outshined by a huge margin. So I think someone like Daniel Rodriguez, who is a welterweight veteran, could really test him. I like that one. Co-main event coming around. I can't believe this was a split decision. I cannot believe my sweet Prince Joong-Young Park almost lost this. Okay, this was unreal. This was absolutely unreal. Joong-Young Park had Brad Tavares. He was looking phenomenal in this one. Okay, there was a weird moment in round number one where Joong-Young Park got hit and he actually stumbled and slipped. He did not actually get knocked down, but it was pretty early on. So Tavares takes round one. But round two, Joong-Young Park, 67 significant strikes to 31. Domination. Round two, 4 minutes, 39 seconds of control time. Out grappled him. I do not know what Junichiro Kamijo was watching, but it was not the same fight as me. Come on, Junichiro. Almost robbed Joong-Young Park. But yes, Joong-Young Park, unanimous decision. 5-1 now in his last six. Great win here. Tavares, not really surprised. All right, 2-fight losing streak, 1-4 in his last five. Not the best. Okay, not the best. He had a good round one, but Joong-Young Park eventually found his footing and kept getting it done, getting a win here in the men's middleweight division. And there's a matchup between Chris Curtis and Roman Kopylov going down at the beginning of next year, and I think Joong-Young Park should fight the winner, because that's what I think. Joong-Young is only 33, from South Korea. Good stuff there. As for Tavares, look, been with the UFC a while. This was your 11th career loss. 11th career loss. That is absolutely bonkers. Okay, well, I know it's even more bonkers. 10 of those have been in the UFC. Okay, his time has come to an end. He's 36. I just hate to say it, but it's true. Just got out grappled in this fight, was getting outstruck, and, you know, you can start strong, but when you only start strong for, like, the beginning of the fight, and then you fade off, just not that much. Not the most exciting stuff, but yeah, we can look past that. So up until this point, 10-1 on predictions, and then we get to the main event. The only fight I actually cared about, as Tatsuo Taira took on Brandon Royval, it goes to a split decision, and Brandon Royval gets the decision. I agree with it. I really love the split decision. I really love the split decision. You want to know why? It's because Tatsuo was doing great in the grappling, doing excellent, but Brandon Royval was better on the feet. He kept reversing him. Tatsuro was kind of fading at the end. Even I can admit that. I mean, this was close. I mean, round one, Royval won. Round two, Tatsuro. Round three, Royval. Round four, Tatsuro. Came down to the final round. It was close. Tatsuro landed two takedowns. Royval just outstruck him 43-14 significantly. It was bad. The two rounds that Tatsuro won, though, 4 minutes, 29 seconds control time in round 4, 4 minutes, 10 seconds round 2. Total for the fight, 12 minutes, 13 seconds control time for Tatsuro Taira. Impressive. 124 significant strikes of 42 for Royval, 172 total strikes for 80. 3-3 on takedowns for Royval, 6-15 for Tatsuro. 3 submission attempts for Brandon Royval, 1 for Tatsuro, which he almost got. Oh my gosh, he almost had the rear naked choke. Oh my gosh, I cannot. Reversal for Brandon Royval, multiple reversals. He was looking pretty good. This was entertaining. One fight of the night. It was a fight of the night. It was entertaining, but it was almost like I was watching. I'm like, Tatsuro, no, just hold position. And he couldn't get it done, but showed a ton of heart, went all 5 rounds, and honestly looked pretty damn good doing it. Looked pretty damn good doing it, but I gotta give it to Brandon Royval, getting it done. I do find it funny, though, that Brandon Royval's 2 fights since losing to Pantoa, his 2 fights in 2024, they both got to a split decision. He's landed a lot of significant strikes, but he low-key has pillow hands. All right, I hate to be mean, but Royval, he probably knocked me out, let me admit it, but he has pillow hands against these UFC guys. Tatsuro, grappling is deadly. His first career loss, 16-1. His first career loss, fight of the night, main event, split decision. That his stock has risen, okay? As you look at the UFC rankings, Dana White's been talking about how screwy these UFC rankings are. I completely agree. And, you know, honestly, Tetsuro's ranked at number 5. Got Kai Kara-France at 4. Amir Albazi at 3. Brandon Romano 2. Brandon Royval 1. It's going to get screwy. Okay, if Kai Sakura wins, there's your title shot, Royval. But if Pantoa beats Asakura in December, you get into an awkward scenario. Okay, Royval is 2-0. He's 2-0 over Royval. But unlike, you know, when you've had Max Holloway and Volkanovski, you know, Max Holloway lost twice, went back and earned his way back. You know, it's not like those fights were close. Pantoa 5-0'd Royval, submitted him in their first fight. So I don't really know what you do. Amir Albazi, Brandon Romano, you know, it'd work really. If Amir Albazi wins that, you probably do Amir Albazi, Brandon Royval for the next title shot. I can't lie. But then you also have Kai Kara-France in the mix. It's getting really awkward at flyweight. But we'll have to see Tatsuro. He'll be back. If I had to matchmake Tatsuro, I would probably put him up against. I know some people were suggesting Steve Ersig, but I don't think we should do that. I think you should do Tetsuro versus the loser of Brand Moreno and Amir Albazi. Actually, even if like Kaya Sakura or Pantoja, like the loser of that, I think you could do them versus Tetsuro Taira. That's Reval. I think if Reval should either fight the winner of Brand Moreno and Amir Albazi, actually, no, he should only fight Amir Albazi if they win that, or he should fight Kaya Sakura, but it's going to get really screwy. I'm going to be honest. Even saying this out loud, Flyweight Division is going to get really screwy. This was a good way to cap off the night. This was a good UFC fight night. Okay, this is how you properly do an Apex event. We had some rough ones in March, in February, in April, but as the years progressed, our Apex events have gotten slightly better. As I look at this card, you know, I'm going to give every single finish a W. All right, so we get 1, 2, 3, 4. We'll give the fight of the night a W, so that's 5. Junior Empire, you know, it's kind of hard to give a lot of these decisions goods because they're all kind of average fights. But I'd say this was just, it was a good fight night. Served its purpose, pretty good. There you have it. And 10-2 on predictions, guys. I mean, come on, we're 252 and 161 on the year. That's right, we are almost plus 100. We're plus 91 right now. We're going to get there. I promise you that. Next week, UFC Vegas 99, UFC Vegas 99, I was about to say 100, not yet, but UFC Vegas 99, we're going to be covering that on our next episode, episode 131, also going to be talking about the Menendez Brothers show on Netflix, I'm excited for that one, and our week 7 predictions, but yeah, UFC Vegas 99, you get another heavyweight matchup between Austin Lane and Robelsa Spongate, someone's going to sleep in that one, get a little fun fight between Brad Katona and Gene Matsumoto at Bantamweight, I'm so excited to see Gene Matsumoto, Matthias Nicolau and Asu Almabayev, that's your number 7 and number 14 at Flyweight. Love me a little Asu Almabayev. Darren Elkins and Daniel Pineda, they promise violence. Brady Heist and Jake Hadley, great matchup between young up-and-coming bantamweights. Charles Johnson, probably the upset fighter of the year, if you ask me, at Flyweight, looking to get his 4th win of the year over Sumudarji. Rob Font, Kyler Phillips, how about a little ranked bantamweight action in that one? Rob Font is ranked 10, Kyler Phillips at 12, and the main event, Anthony Hernandez, Michelle Pereira, who will move up into the top 10 for their next fight, and who will move down to unranked competition. Michelle Pereira, ranked number 14 on a 7-fight win streak. Anthony Hernandez, ranked number 13. He is on a 6-fight win streak. What is Anthony Hernandez on right now? Let me double check. 1, 2, 3, 5-fight win streak. Oh, not too bad. In that 5-fight win streak, I mean 4 finishes. So that's pretty good. But out of Michelle Pereira's 7-fight win streak, he has 4 finishes as well, including 3 straight in 1 minute. I'm pumped for that. Super exciting, guys. Thank you so much for joining me. I always love doing this. It's 11:10 at night. This is taking me so long. My nose is still not 100% better. I don't know what's going on with that, but we'll be back, still delivering content, still trying to find guests, still trying to figure out how to grow this thing, do this for a living. I don't want to work a 9-to-5, but we'll do what we must. Guys, as always, I'll make sure to catch you all next time on none other than the Surprise Jab Podcast.